and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Party Line because, well, we have a party line.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey. So, yeah, so we are, this is a little experiment. Not only is this podcast number 69, wink, wink.
Sweet, I didn't know that when I agreed to this.
Yeah.
I couldn't say bah humbug to that.
No. But this is a new experiment for We're All Gonna Die. We're actually trying to record this podcast through the phone lines. And so there's three people at a house in Pittsburgh and one individual at a house in Kansas City. And considering Pennsylvania is a two-party state, could all three of the guests introduce yourselves and express your consent for being recorded over the phone? Jason, you can go first.
Going first?
Jason!
Oh, hey, it's me. Hi, I'm Jason Baldinger. I am a poet and other various ne'er-do-well type activities, and yes, you do have my consent to record this fabulous podcast.
Fantastic. And Stephanie?
Hi, I'm Stephanie Bria. I'm a poet and an events organizer here in Pittsburgh, and you also have my consent to record this podcast.
Fantastic. And James!
Hi, I'm James Venture. I guess I'm a poet. I always feel weird when I say that. I write stuff. And I'm sitting in a truck in a parking lot, a U-Haul parking lot in Kansas City. And yes, you have my consent to record.
Oh, wow, that sounds so exotic when you say that.
But I don't have a beer in my hand, so.
You can share mine.
They have not yet made the fax machine for beer yet.
That's yeah. Right. It's only a Mickey's Big Mouth. Don't be jealous.
That is when we will have, like, a truly modest society.
Yes. Well, you know, the future ain't what it used to be. So, as part of our party line theme, we are talking about, actually, it's two things. We're talking about an event and a book. The first of which being, well, actually, Stephanie, do you want to talk about Bah Humbug, and then...
Sure. Okay. So, Bah Humbug is in its fifth season. It's an annual event that Jason Baldinger and myself conceived, probably over beers, maybe over coffee. Either one, both are good. Sort of a David Sedaris Holidays on Ice type situation, wherein local writers... not necessarily just poets, also memoirists, short fiction writers, sort of share their experience of working around the holiday season. So folks range from obvious sort of retail and blue-collar workers to healthcare workers to white-collar professionals and academia, such as yourself, Matthew.
That is true.
We kind of try to have a good time with it. There's usually some drinking involved because obviously it's hosted at a bar, and we draw names out of a hat. People write interesting bios. This year, we are also raising money the second year in a row that we chose the Greater Pittsburgh Area Food Bank as our cause to raise funds for. We felt that it was really important to once again kind of make sure that a lot of people do, you know, Toys for Tots or fundraisers like that at this time of year, but we really wanted to make sure that people had food as a sort of more important thing to have necessarily than the latest, I don't know, what do kids want these days, Barbie, Paw Patrol, I don't know, Paw Patrol Barbie. So this year it's $5 suggested donation. Obviously folks can donate more. And it's this Thursday at the Brillo Box, 8 o'clock. That's kind of what it is.
Yes, and there'll be a link to the Facebook event when I post this, so
right.
Which will be tonight. So moving on now, so Jason and James.
Hi, Matt.
Hey. So let's talk about Little Fires Hiding.
All right.
I'm sorry, I could step off for just a second.
Okay. Well, then I'll field this one while James takes care of what he needs to. So James and I met in 2016 at a reading in Blue Springs, Missouri, and there was an immediate sort of like, oh, we kind of, you know, we hit in the same places as writers. And he invited me to join a poetry group that he curates online called 365 Poems in 365 Days. Obviously, the concept is to try and write a poem a day. And I got to know James better and his work better, and asked him, oh, sometime late in 2017, if he'd like to do a split book together. And we had set a date for March that I was going to send him a manuscript. But shortly thereafter, I had a chapbook turned down from a local company. So I said, James, would you be interested in reading this and seeing if you can work with this? And I sent it to James, and he loved the book. And then he sent me his version of the book. I don't know if he's back to fill in that next part of the story.
Okay.
Look. He is. Okay.
Yeah, I am back. Sorry. I got out of that quick. Someone was knocking on my windshield. So.
Oh, jeez.
This podcast is so exciting already.
I know. I thought I was going to get kicked out of here.
Oh.
We're good.
Sweet.
Okay. So Jason invited me to take a look at his book, and like I was awed by it, and I didn't know if I was necessarily really having anything to add to it, but I tried, and I spent way longer trying than I thought I needed, well, than I thought I was going to, but it took me about 3 months to come up with stuff that I thought would fit well with what Jason did. And I think that the way it came out, it wasn't necessarily started that way, but it sort of became sort of a call and response piece between two cities, and specifically sort of the middle class, the working class, I guess, people, voices, I suppose, from both cities kind of came out. Obviously, I think we both have kind of similar backgrounds, so, you know, we came from different cities, so I think that shows through.
Yeah, I think it does. As a reader, it dovetails incredibly well. Especially, yeah, I think that you're right. I mean, both the sense of place and experience, and common experience for working people that weaves these two poets together is,
It seems like James and I had similar backgrounds in some respects. I think he moved around a little bit more than I did, but we both saw a goodly portion of the Midwest over our years, and the Rust Belt aesthetic that comes with Pittsburgh shines through, as does Kansas City itself. Those cities do sort of mirror each other pretty well, I would say, having been to both.
I actually haven't been to Pittsburgh, but
well, whenever you're ready, you come on over. We'll do a reading.
Okay, I'm gonna make that happen. Good on my threat.
Always bring a caravan.
All right, get
Reberg to bring a bus of merry pranksters this way.
You know what? I'm sure I can convince him to do that.
It wouldn't be too hard.
No.
Reberg is our publisher, Jason Reberg, who runs Spartan Press and Kung Fu Treachery. And is it Stubborn Mule, or is it?
Yeah, Stubborn Mule Press. He does that with Jeanette Powers.
Yes.
He's a busy guy.
Yes, he is.
So fantastic. So actually, I think maybe perhaps speaking of this aesthetic and whatever, I was wondering, I don't know, James or Jason, if we could take the poem that refreshes and actually have somebody read one of the poems from the book.
I can do that.
So people get a sense of what we're talking about here. And yeah.
Do you want me to read one, James, and then you read one?
Sure, go for it.
All right.
Do it.
We'll start with this somewhat seasonal poem. This is Winter 1979. Corner of Beethoven and Apollo. hanging drywall in a warehouse. No running water. Piss in a bucket. Scan the east side of the city. Shake drywall dust out of my hair. The sun in this city is the strange case of Jekyll and Hyde. When it's gray with the brutal winter light, it could still be hell with the lid off. When it's sunshine, especially in the spring, especially in the fall, I swear it's the goddamn Garden of Eden. Today, as I look at the Immaculate Heart of Mary, it's both, sometimes at the same time. Pellegrino used to live down the street late 70s. He's got his stories out. I can't keep the date straight. So let's say it's winter 1979, when he climbed that Douglas fir on the hillside drunk and cut 12 feet off the tree so his wife could have the Christmas she wanted. He tells me about Chessy, a Polish drunk a few hairs over 5 feet who stuttered and played the accordion. He fired howitzers during the Great War. His brain never recovered. His sister was in an institution, and after his parents died, he couldn't afford it, so he moved her in with him, lived off her social security checks. She died near the end of the month, and he didn't call the cops, didn't call the coroner, waited days until the next check came, bought himself a shit ton of beer, drank himself silly, and then he called the coroner, who couldn't tell when she died. Her skin was wax, her ears were black. They covered her in a sheet and took her away, all the while Chessy rambled that he swore he fed her breakfast that morning. Chessy claimed he married Spanish Anne, who no one ever saw, but when he mentioned her, he'd wheeze in a nasal voice, "Blue Spanish eyes, tears falling from your blue Spanish eyes." It was nothing like Humperdinck. Alcohol got the better of Chessy. He lost the houses to taxes and loans. No more Iron City Pounders. He died alone in one of those goddamn government rest homes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I had to take a minute there before.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Yeah, no, that's...
All right, well, yeah. So when Jason sent me his book, that was the first poem I read. How do I follow that up?
Yeah.
So I just started working on like kind of response pieces from my own perspective or my own experience. So mine's a little bit kind of it's a little shorter and it's a little, I don't know, in the rose colored glasses hindsight it seems like I remember these times as kids, but this is my poem called "We Worked Retail Through the Holidays." We would ride to the ice flush in my old theater, tires fall hard and uniquely unround enough to be a hazard even in the best. Always having to keep a foot on the gas, otherwise you'd die, and who knew if I'd ever be able to get it to turn over again. Huge icicles dropped from the poles above, and blasted to a universe of shards on the hood, glowing in the red and the blue. And whenever we got to where we were going, if we stayed too long, the doors would freeze, and the only way in would be to pry the hatchback open with a screwdriver and a boozy 3 a.m. prayer. And we'd make it back to our beds in time for 2 or 3 fitful hours of nauseous sleep before we returned to exchange unwrapped holiday gifts for cash and cards, smiling through bloodshot eyes, rolling stomachs, and wistful memories of broken mattresses. We lived only one shade north of poverty, and we worried about everything. Damn, did we have a good time.
Love that poem.
I love that poem, too.
Thank you.
Steph, did you bring a poem?
Well, sort of. I kind of broke the rules, so I don't know if it counts or not.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. What rules?
I know
how
you I broke the rules.
Yeah, I expect you to break the rules.
So, I have I was told to bring a holiday poem, probably assuming that it should be something that I was going to read on Thursday. But the only thing I have for Thursday is actually a poem for JB, so I cannot read it now because that would ruin the surprise. So I found another poem that I thought was a really great holiday poem. My boyfriend and I make holiday cards every year. It's a tradition that he did way before we started dating. He's an artist, and I am now tasked with to figure out the line or the bit of poetry that we include on the card. And so when I was looking for what we were going to print on this year's card, I found this poem, which is not appropriate for the card, but I really enjoyed it, so I figured I would bring that poem instead and break the rules. Do we think that's okay?
I think that's okay.
Okay.
So, this poem is actually called Your Luck is About to Change by Susan Elizabeth Howe. It's a found poem. The line, Your Luck is About to Change, is from a fortune cookie, so that's important to know. Your luck is about to change. Ominous, inscrutable Chinese news to get just before Christmas. Considering my reasonable health, marriage spicy as Mugu Gaipan, career running like a not-too-old Chevrolet. Not bad, considering what can go wrong. The bony finger of Uncle Sam might point out my husband, my own National Guard, and set him in Afghanistan. My boss could take a personal interest. The pain in my left knee could spread to my right. Still, as the old year tips into the new, I insist on the infant hope, gooing and kicking his legs in the air. I won't give in to the dark, the sub-zero weather, the fog, or even the neighbor's nativity. Their four-year-old has arranged his whole legion of dinosaurs so they too worship the child, joining the cow and sheep, or else ultimate mortals, they've come to eat ox and camel, Mary and Joseph, then savor the newborn babe.
Damn.
Yeah, it's a great holiday poem.
Yeah.
It's not going on our family Christmas cards this year, though.
Yeah.
Just in case you were curious, it was vetoed.
So, yeah, with these three poems and with the event and with the book and stuff, this of course all has me thinking about this time of the year, everything seems so much more emotionally pregnant for some reason. The banality of things like work and whatever, suddenly there's this, like, heightened... I don't know if I like Christmas, I guess is what I'm trying to say, for that reason.
I don't like Christmas. I've never liked Christmas, so, yeah.
I love Christmas, so, odd man out. Odd woman out. Sorry.
I don't like all the obligations that go along with it. I like all the good feelings and people being nice to each other, and, I like the festivity of it. I don't like the obligations.
That's fair.
That is totally fair. Which I think, adds to the, you gotta spend money, right? That's what this is about, right? We need to spend money.
No, we don't.
I was gonna say, do we? Do we have to?
Can't you just write poems for people and just call it that?
That's what I'm getting, JB. I'm writing a poem for him that I'm reading on Thursday. That's what you're getting, buddy.
I appreciate that. That's all I ever want. If you write me a poem, I'm a happy man. I'm actually looking for the poem that you enjoy so much, Stephanie, and I can't seem to find it here. I'm sure I can if I try hard enough, though.
You should try, because then that could be your gift to me, and since I already know what it is, it doesn't have to be a surprise.
Yeah. We can read it soon enough if I can actually find it here.
Well, if it's not spending money, though, isn't there this imperative to be happy or whatever, which is also...
I'm much happier
weird.
When I have no money. I've gotten used to that fact, at least. I can handle living life with no money.
I think there is an obligation to be happy or put on a brave face or to be cheerful at this time of year. And it's not always the case. Sometimes things are very sad. People think a lot about, loved ones that aren't here, or they think a lot about, they wanted things to be a specific way, and then it didn't turn out that way. Sort of the end of the year kind of inventory always happens.
Ooh, yeah.
That's always a frightening proposition.
Yep.
Does that mean you have a resolution, Stephanie?
Oh, no.
I
definitely don't have a resolution. I used to do this thing where I would choose a word for the year. As kind of like an intention. I don't have one picked yet for 2019, so I don't know that I will, but I thought that worked out much better than a resolution. So.
That's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
What were you saying, James?
I was waiting for someone to have some golden nugget where I was like, oh, that's exactly what I need to do.
You need to...
Someone force feed me the answers to life. That's what I want.
Well, you're a poet, so I think a word of the year is a good idea. You could have that.
I do like that idea a lot. Now I have to figure out my word.
So do you just have to use that word every day, then?
No, or? No, it's just kind of like an intention that kind of, like, kind of, that you hold in your heart. That sounds really cheesy. It's an intention that you hold in your heart that influences all of your choices for the year. No. I don't know. I can't think of any good ones off the top of my head that don't sound ridiculous after using the phrase hold in your heart here on this podcast. So I'm just going to be quiet and regroup.
Well, 'tis also the season for, I think, ridiculous sentiments as well.
Well, that is true. I mean, everything is over the top. In a time when you're trying to find the right gift or the right thing to do for the holiday or for New Year's or whatever, I think everybody, with that sense of finality that comes with the end of the year, which is weird because, again, time is not actually linear, but that's a different statement or question, you know. But,
it's just the whole world went and got Liberace'd.
Well, somebody had to. I mean, we just bedazzle everything in lights, and hopefully it takes away all our fear, right?
Right.
Right.
No, yeah, I think I find New Year's to be a lot more of a downer, I guess, or just a lot more of a specter than Christmas, I think, for me at least. There's too much, I don't know, forced self-reflection about accounting for things, and, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's not an easy thing to do. So, I don't know. I feel like, I don't know, for me, once I get past that obligation part of Christmas, I don't know, I think of it as more of a holiday for kids. I tend to think of it in terms of that.
Yeah.
So, outside of getting, you know, a gift for a few people around me, adult-wise, I mean, I tend to just focus on kids, and that makes the over-the-top part of it okay, because it's sort of like, I don't know, it's a big cartoon.
Your boy's 2 years old now, right, James?
Yeah, he'll be 3 in January.
So is he getting really excited about the holiday now, or?
He is. Apparently, though, he told my wife that today that he was going to get a little dog named Max and steal her Christmas. So that might be something.
Alright.
Yeah. So.
Didn't you tell him it wasn't enough that he's getting a sibling for the holidays?
I know, that doesn't play too well with commercials for toys.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, the miracle of life and shit. And
yeah.
Plastic things that make noise. I mean, come on, the choice is pretty clear here, people.
Yeah. I'm sure I was just under 2 when my little brother was born, younger brother, I guess, And I'm sure I had the same reaction. There was a choice between, you know, presence or someone else that you know,
it's been my experience in families, in-laws, that, no, actually, no, it's even my own family. The oldest never really forgives the others for having been conceived on some deep psychological level. You know, there was a time, there was a golden age, even if they don't have conscious memories of it. I'm thinking, you know, well, I won't say any names, but, you know, even if it's like before two, they still have this memory of this golden era. Had the Trinity, and then, you know.
All of a sudden, you've become an episode of Schoolhouse Rock, Matt.
Yeah.
Three is the magic number.
Yeah. So, what are you going to do? But,
yeah.
But at least we have poetry and writing and
alcohol.
And alcohol to make sense of these experiences, which you know, I think that's one of the things, you know, to kind of refocus or whatever. You know, thinking about the book and actually thinking about the reading that's coming up is, you know, unfortunately people have sometimes, I think, such a romantic notion about what poetry is and what poetry is supposed to be about and what poetry can do. And one of the things that I was thinking as I was prepping my own piece for Bah Humbug and rereading Little Fires Hiding is, you know, thinking about all of those people who have experiences like the ones that will be talked about on Thursday and the ones that are in print in this book, who unfortunately, because of whatever baggage our culture puts on us, and maybe also, and I say this as an academic, the way in which academia sometimes puts things on a pedestal that, you know, they think they're completely cut off from the things that the poetry can do to record experience and make sense of, yeah, even things like work.
Well, that's what you're trying to struggle to make sense of, and I mean, in most ways, I mean, part of the reason why I despise the holidays are those Christmas seasons that I was working either two jobs or I was working at Walmart or a place like that where, you know, there is no way to actually enjoy the holiday because you're constantly being reminded or brought down or nagged or tormented by somebody who wants this thing and it's the perfect thing in their life, apparently, and, you know, it's not going to solve any of the problems that they actually have. The Tickle Me Elmo won't solve all the world's problems, unfortunately. Wouldn't it be lovely if it would, I guess?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, I even think about, I have a colleague who's, you know, they have two young children, and her husband works for UPS.
Yes.
And he's been going, I think, 12-hour days since the week before Thanksgiving, and will continue to be 12-hour days into the new year.
Yeah, I believe Bobby Paycheck will be reading about his dad working for UPS at the holidays.
Wow.
On Thursday night. So, if you come to the Brillo Box on Thursday night at 8 o'clock, at some point in time, Bobby will read, and you will hear all about what it's like to have to deal with a very angry man who's worked 12 hours a day delivering packages for 8 weeks.
It's Christmas.
Yeah. Do you have a poem that you would like to read, Matt?
I left them on the table downstairs.
Oh, all right.
But I will say, so here's the preview. I am reading something called Every Campus is Haunted, and it is about people in my profession who have, well, basically lost their fucking minds. And I read a version of it 2 years ago, and three people I know in the last 2 years who are academics have lost their shit, so I'm swapping one out, and I wrote three new ones, and it just keeps happening.
Well, I mean, what better time to lose your mind than now?
Yeah, it's finals week, actually, for me.
I don't know what winter in Kansas City is like, James, but round about November 1st, the light in Pittsburgh changes and it turns gray, and it stays gray until mid to late April, and there is not really good natural light, so seasonal depression is rampant in this town.
Yeah.
Starting around this time of the year.
I'm fortunate that I'm not dealing with that.
Nothing anymore.
Yeah, that's not quite an issue as far as, you know, gray every day.
Yeah.
Fortunate in that respect.
We don't get that lucky. I may come to Kansas City just to see some sun.
we'll have some gray days, but it's not going to be like that.
No, we're permanent gray here.
Yeah. Permanent gray gets dark around 4:30.
Mm.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, it's great.
This podcast is taking a depressing turn.
I don't think I can read a poem that would make it any happier. That's the problem. Do you have something happy you can talk about, Stephanie?
No, I'm like almost out of my beer.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, no, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm conserving beer well here. I've still got a little bit of this hand grenade left to go, so.
Yeah, I only got about a quarter of an inch in my Mickey's grenade.
You guys are drinking malt liquor. That's technically different.
That is true. We are
technically different.
Just saying.
Somebody's got to drink Mickey's.
I didn't realize it was an option. Oh. Again, you're late. I'm admitting that to the podcast.
You got really excited about Straub. I heard you be excited about Straub.
I like Straub. I mean, they sponsor some of my events, so I mean, I don't care. I'm a Straub drinker.
That's fair.
Maybe they can sponsor this podcast.
Yes.
Can you get a Mickey's Big Mouth sponsorship?
I don't know.
Ooh.
We can try.
Give it a shot.
That can't be that hard to do, right?
I wonder what their standards are.
I'll look into that for next time.
Oh, that would be awesome. We could maybe find a way to give away a case of Mickey's Big Mouth at the next Bah Humbug.
Ooh.
We have a whole year to work on it.
Ooh, baby.
I could just buy one, honestly. I mean, you know.
The distro on Brownsville Road, they're only $20.
See, I got this. I can make $20. I can spare $20 between now and the end of next year.
Tight.
All I gotta do is a dollar a week, and we'll get there.
Yeah. Now I'm coughing on the phone. Do we want to keep going? Do we want to leapfrog into the bottom five, perhaps?
I don't know. Do we want to read more poems, or what do you guys want to do?
I don't have any more poems, so it's up to you guys. I was hoping you were gonna find that one for me, but
oh, I did find that one.
Oh, well, how about this? Two more poems, and then the bottom five, yes. And then we'll get more beer.
This is how you know I love you, Steph. I'm going to read this off my phone because I couldn't find the paper copy, so sorry. So this is called The Hymn to Inevitability. She was 16, all full up on Middle America dreams. Her lineage told her path was clear. She'd be married, then barefoot, then pregnant. And that was what was in her head when I met her. 3 months later, Christmas just around the bend, she told me. No. She insisted our engagement was the only thing in life that she could want. It was inevitable. I was just past 18, and I knew the world was bigger than I thought it was. I knew words like inevitable should almost never be used. I didn't know yet that what we confuse for love is often lust. So I caved at her behest, and with my mother's blessing, we would call it a pre-engagement, the devil in the details. So we went ring shopping, sterile mall stores, high markup, gaudy jewelry. We didn't know any better. Layaway plans augment hourly wages under $5 an hour. Christmas just over a week away, and I had to think of places or spaces where I managed to drop to my knees to ask questions that were inevitable. I had no clue where or how, but my family was on our way to my grandfather's. And I remember a mountaintop a handful of minutes away, a commanding view of Cambria County, a commanding view of what was slipping away. We drove detours up the mountain, her impatient, not clear on the plan. Top, we walked around and talked. I'd only been here once. It had not dawned on me then that this was used mostly as an illegal trash dump. Dead soldier bottles, laundry machines, car parts, chase lounges, and pipes strew the length of the pull-up. My stepfather hides in the trees, video camera stretches across the highway. I couldn't change my decision now, so I found the place with the least trash. Dropped down to one knee, not realizing in that moment that I was about to kneel on the desiccated corpse of a raccoon. Her big eyes getting bigger, her anticipation shouting, and I have to shift my body so she doesn't see the dead animal between my legs. Instead of kneeling, I pop a catcher squat, my crotch covering the corpse. She says yes, and my stepfather comes out of the woods. They both walk away, happy, chittering birds. Kick the corpse, mostly out of spite.
Thank you.
No problem, Steph.
And if I could say in a moment of absolute cynical opportunism, of course, there is another recorded version of that, you reading that poem, with theremin accompaniment.
Oh, that's true, it is.
Yes, on the Theramonster release, Holiday Friendly Unit Shifter, which is available at untilthequasar.bandcamp.com. You can check that out. There is a theremin holiday record with poems from Jason Baldinger and Scott Silsby and other folks. So, yay!
Yeah.
Sorry.
That was good promotion.
I try, you know. I'm cynical, opportunist, game show host type that I am.
I'm going to do my best to pull up the entire roster for the Bah Humbug so I can annoy your listeners with 13 names that won't mean anything.
Do it.
So, but James, well, I do that. James should read a poem.
You and James should absolutely read a poem.
All right, I'll do another one from the book. This is sort of a happier one, I guess. I'm trying to do something a little less depressing since we kind of went down a hole there for a little bit. So at least here's another one that. Sort of a true-to-life thing that I remember well, at least. It's called At a Hole in the Wall Bar, December 2002. It was a slow slide. The night wore on, and the table got bigger. And you hit a point where you don't care whose tab it is. Rounds and rounds and rounds. And I fed quarters into the jukebox that had an internet connection. Pre-YouTube, my eyes glowed at all the obscure options to which I could subject everyone in the bar. And Eddie Vedder screamed about raiding the fridge, if the waitress brought a couple more pitchers, and my dart was just to the right of bullseye, always only enough to lose the game. And the idiots at the bar next door drank Bud Ice from the bottle and toasted out generically bad karaoke of Living on a Prayer. And as our table grew, so did our base. We soon had a UN of drunks, opinions, but not fists, lying. Some blue tequila came, and novice that I was, I had to be shown the proper booze, lime, salt, etiquette, and I still don't get it. And I forgot to feed more cash into the jukebox, so it automatically rolled into Nickelback. And urged by the table and my own indignation, I rushed to the wall and requested some Indy Prague from San Francisco, and Chad Kroger gets cut off mid-circle jerk, and the bartender's pissed. What the fuck, she cries, and cuts the speakers and shouts to the whole bar, fuck you all! The whole table, we've grown to five tables pushed together, and I don't know half of their names, agrees that I should complain to the governor. But I decline, refill my glass, order another pitcher, and explain that someone gets so upset over something like that, they gotta have some serious stuff going on. And I'm betting she needs that win, and I won't take it from her. hour and a half later, we stumble into maybe 2 a.m. Kansas City, off to wherever we need to go. And I never saw most of them again. I can't remember half of their faces. And it wasn't until the end of a brief walk back to my apartment that I realized I still had a pint glass in my hand. And now I don't even know where that is.
Again, that is off of Little Fires Hiding by Jason Baldinger and James Benger. It is off of Kung Fu Treachery Press. And what did you say again was the best way for folks if they want to hear or want to read the whole collection? What's the best place for them to find it, get it?
They can get it at BarnesandNoble.com, I believe.
Yes.
And locally, you can get it at Caliban. And hopefully this weekend, I will finally get it to White Whale Books as well.
Fantastic.
If you're local.
If you're local. If you're from Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in a U-Haul parking lot in Kansas City, Barnes & Noble?
Barnes & Noble, I believe Prospero's Books has it. And I'm not positive on this, but I think they were going to get some to Barb's Books in Belle, Missouri as well.
I love Barb's.
So,
fantastic.
Or, you know, go to your local indie bookstore and request it. I'm sure they can get it for you.
Fantastic, yes, what a wonderful idea. Stephanie, Vital Beats on, what's that thing again we're doing Thursday?
Bah Humbug.
That's right.
Technically, it's Bah Humbug, Writers Wrestle, The Holiday Spirit is the full title.
Mm.
Thursday, Brillo Box, 8 p.m., $5 suggested donation. Goes to the food bank here in Pittsburgh, and JB has the list of readers pulled up on his phone, correct?
I do.
Alright.
Readers to include Bob Paycheck, Vanessa Vetch, Nisha Filia, Bob Wallicky, Bart Solarchik, Adam Macho, Lori Jaquila, Matt Yusia, Megan Tudelo, Andrea Loria, Melanie Dion, Nathan Kukulski, Aaliyah Thomas, and Stephanie Brea. And that is everything that I know about it at this point in time. I will be hosting with Stephanie.
I mean, I am obviously the weakest link in that chain. Wow. That's quite the lineup.
We, you know, the Pittsburgh writer family is happy to do things like this, you know?
All right, so now it's time for the Bomb 5. And the Bomb 5 is, of course, a series of questions not related to our main topic, but that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. And, of course, the special wrinkle for this podcast, since we have three guests here on the party line, is I'm going to ask a question, and you're going to have to come to some sort of consensus
okay. As
to what the answer is. Yes.
All right.
All right. Are we ready?
Sure.
Yep.
All right. Question one. Out of all the possible ways to die, what is the way you least want to die?
Suffocation.
Wait.
Burn to death?
Yeah, I have a fear of fire. Like, it's an irrational one, probably, but I'm going to have to... I agree with James.
I don't know if I fear it, but I just feel like that it would be painful up until the end. Like,
for a long time.
Where it's say drowning, from what I hear, at a certain point, just like falling asleep. So, from what I hear, you know, obviously from people who haven't drowned.
Yeah. So I have almost drowned, and that is correct. But I have good news about burning to death.
Which is what?
Once you get to beyond the third degree burn and the nerve endings go, you don't feel a thing.
Huh,
once you get past. Once you burn away all that pesky skin, you get to the nerve endings and you don't feel a damn thing.
You mean the largest organ in the body?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to go with burning to death since, you know, I'm outvoted 2-1 here. So, I mean, I not that I don't disagree, it also sounds terrible.
Yep.
You know. So, we'll take burning to death for 100, Matt.
All right, great. Question two. of the living villains of history, whose obituary would you most like to write?
Living villains, huh?
Yep, have to still be with us, kicking, breathing, fucking up the world.
This is difficult. There's so many villains.
There's so many villains. I always like to think about, like, what the most Faustian ones were. You know, the ones that could have been good, could have been brilliant, could have been redeemable, but they made some massive, horrible choice. That could be delicious and interesting to explore, I think.
Yeah, you know. I don't know. You got anything, Steph?
No, I mean, there's obvious answers.
Yeah.
But,
some of those obvious answers seem to be hanging themselves, though.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know about, like, yeah. So, I don't know.
I've got nothing.
James has never had to do these questions. They're hard.
They are hard questions, and they're surprise questions.
Yeah, so this is like my, this is the part of the podcast that gives me anxiety, in case anyone was curious. Because then I go home and I'm like, oh man, that was what I wanted to say like an hour from now.
Should we just go with, like, Mitch McConnell?
You know what, JB, since you were outvoted the last time, you get to be the vote this time. How does that? So we're going to be really fair.
But
that's it. It's done.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes, please.
Joe Manchin.
What's that?
Joe Manchin.
Oh, Joe
Manchin. Senator from West Virginia.
Joe Manchin is actually a really good choice because he supposedly stands for a certain set of ideals and does not practice a damn one of them.
Yeah, he's a shill for the coal industry.
Okay. I'm going to take Matt's suggestion and roll with that just to make it easy so I don't have to, like, go off the political deep end here.
Alright, so let's move on to the next question.
Alright, question three.
These anxieties through the roof.
Yes. Question three, what would your idea of purgatory be like?
And not this podcast?
Not this podcast. Not the dead air phone sound of this podcast, no, but...
then not my real life. You mean not my working five-job life?
That's a good one.
I really don't like waiting in line a lot, but I especially don't like waiting in line for, like, brunch or something, like, overly ridiculous like that. So that would be my own personal, like, it would be waiting in line, but it would be waiting in, like, specific lines.
I could actually get behind that. I was the second person in line for the post office this morning with two people in front of me with apparently too many questions. So I'm one person away from, you know, someone waiting on me, and I waited for 15 minutes. So maybe, yeah, line waiting is probably... ride with my answer after that this morning.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with that too. I think I would get specific with the say you're in line for a checkout wherever, and you're like three people back, and the person that cashier decides that they want to ask every single person that comes through the line like every possible personal question. Forever, even if you only have like a candy bar.
So James, this doesn't pertain to you, but here in Pittsburgh, there's a terrible grocery chain. Well, it's an okay grocery chain, but there's a branch in the north side. It's a Giant Eagle is the real store's name, but we call it the Dirty Bird because it's like a terrible grocery store. And you will sometimes go in there, and there will be three people in front of you, and it will still take 20 minutes. So, it would be like, it's like a combination of, like, people's, like, access cards not working, and cashiers moving really slow on purpose, and someone needing cigarettes, and then, like, it's, like, the worst. You would hate it.
Are you talking about Chestnut Street?
So.
out as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that.
All right, so we're in agreement. We're in agreement on this one. Everyone agreed.
All right, question four. If you could unmake any invention, what would it be?
If you can make it or if you can unmake it?
Unmake it. Just take it out of the human experience, human history. Just whoop, it's gone.
There's a part of me that really wants to say the internet.
Yeah, I was gonna go a little more specific and say social media.
What do you think, Steph?
So I use social media a lot for the work that I do, so, like, and I also can see its value. I think we've gone far past that as a society, so, like, I wouldn't undo it, but, like, I'd dial it back a little bit. So as someone who used to work for an invention company, I wrote about inventions. I feel like there's, like, literally thousands of terrible inventions that get made all the time that are just like a waste of like time and plastic and energy and resources that are like way worse than social media, at least to me personally. And so like think of like all those made for TV products.
Ooh.
And like, you know, like, I mean, name any of them. Like, I personally helped write like the blanket one.
Snuggie.
The Snuggie. Yeah, it was called the Stadium Pal. I'm totally breaking all confidentiality agreements right now on this podcast.
You haven't had that job in 5 years. It's fine.
It's past the statute of limitations. But there were plenty of inventions that I helped get onto the market. And they're all just, like, a lot of them are just really, like, not necessary. And then people buy them at, like, the CVS checkout counter or whatever, and then they break, or then they sit in their house, and then you throw them away. And so while I can see how social media can be a bad thing, it's not, to me personally, all bad. So, whatever. Made for TV, like, were, you know, late night, like, whatever inventions of bullshit. Like, the one that, like, you microwave eggs in individually, or whatever it is. Like, all of those, like, as a collective category. I'm not backing down on this one, so you guys are going to have to really convince me.
The collective ire of the Snuggie seems to be coming through on all three of us. So I think
it's called the Stadium Pal. The Stadium Pal, gentlemen. That was how it was marketed originally.
Death to the Snuggie.
All right, last one should be easier. You only get 5 choices. We only get 12 choices, but question 5. What is your least favorite month?
November.
We have to agree on our least favorite month?
Yes.
February. It's cold and rainy / icy, gray, and there's Valentine's.
He makes a good point.
That's a good point.
Like Valentine's
Day. No, I don't really. I think March is worse because spring hasn't really started yet. Like, it kind of does here, but not really. But I mean, I can. We're all in the same. So I can say February, if that makes it easier.
I mean, we do call it Smarch around here.
Yeah, we call it Smarch because it's, yeah.
It's just not March. It's not really anything.
It still snows
it's
sometimes.
It's actually purgatory to bring it back around to...
Ooh.
Nice callback.
Yeah.
So. Pretty soon, we're like professional podcast guests on this show.
Yeah.
You know.
I think this is my 8th or 9th. I'm not sure which, so, you know.
Yeah, I'll have to check the paperwork.
All right, so we're going with...
I guess we can go with March. That's pretty close to February.
No, yeah. It's fine. March.
Alright then, well, I think that's about it. Again, there'll be links on the website to both the Bah Humbug event page and places and possibilities to buy Little Fires Hiding and other fine Jason Baldinger, James Benger products. Thank you all for doing the podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Matt.
Thank you for this opportunity to talk on this princess phone.
Yes, absolutely.
You got a princess phone?
Yeah, we should probably post pictures of what the phones look like on the internet.
I just have a standard black phone here, so.
Yeah, you have the black office phone. I have, like, the 80s black office phone, and Stephanie has a princess phone. Mm-hmm. So,
see, I picked the attic unselfishly because I figured you would want the bedroom phone, and I didn't even know it was a princess phone.
It's kind of, I probably got the best phone.
Yeah, you definitely did.
And you know what, that phone was a stage prop, so that phone's a star.
I can tell, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Alright, so our next episode will eventually happen, and it'll be about something. Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is gunnadiepodcast.com. We're also on iTunes, Google Play Podcasts, I think Stitcher, TuneIn, Podcast Addict, and Mixcloud, if I remember to put it on Mixcloud. Follow us on Twitter at @GonnaDiePodcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Ooh, and I guess there's also a zombie We're All Gonna Die Google Plus page, which will survive till April and not be updated. Thanks again to Andrew Fox for our brand new theme music. And again, thanks to our guests, JB, Stephanie, James, Raider Meets.